More Americans are now literate than ever before, but at the same time, people read less books than ever before. What's going on here? Grady Harp is an Amazon top reviewer. He shares his perspective on America's literary scene and what its future might be on this episode of Cato Gottfried. I'm your co-host, Joseph Ford Cato, and my co-host is Paul Gottfried. It's no secret that less and less people read books each year, although the presence of stuff like Amazon Kindle has, I think, to a certain extent, revived readership. If not for Kindle, I think if books were just paper, it would be a really disastrous situation. But Grady, do you see that maybe over the last year or so, a certain genre of book has proven more popular among, you could say, the general readers in the U.S.? Or do you think that nowadays there really is no one single type of book that's more popular than the other, that it's more like perhaps a free-for-all?
I think it goes in shifts. I agree with what you're saying about Kindle being sort of the savior of the book world, although I'm hearing from many people that bookstores are beginning to return, which makes me very happy to see shelves of actual books instead of something in the cloud. But as far as what people are reading and what I see, I think the preponderance of novels that are science fiction tainted or time travel or space travel are proliferating, and I think that may be due to the general dismay of the chaos of what we're going through right now. If things aren't too great on this world, maybe we ought to explore the outer world. And I think a lot of people are going along with that. As far as what I'm asked to review, many of them are books on science fiction or extraterrestrial kinds of stories. But probably the overall majority of books that I'm hearing about are self-help books. Everybody thinks that they can offer just the right answers to the public for whatever problems happen to be shifting them, whether that be publishing books, writing, fixing mental states, getting over addiction, working with depression, how to buy and sell and make millions overnight. they're little quick books that sort of get out there and promise a lot. And I find that people are really reading those a lot. I'm not sure how many of them are retained. Probably most of them remain in the cloud after they've read it once. But there is a proliferation of those.
Paul?
Yeah, I'm listening to this with some interest, and since I'm 77 years old, I can sort of think back about what people were reading in the 1950s, what my mother read, and it seems that people back then were interested in very different genre from what they're reading now. For instance, books that emphasize spiritual journeys, whether it was Thomas Merton, whose conversion to Catholicism, or Peter Marshall, the Presbyterian minister, his widow wrote something, very popular books, or books about World War II, like the Caine Mutiny, was extremely popular back in the 1950s. There wasn't as much emphasis on mental health. There was certainly was not as much emphasis on addiction, on drug addiction. But it also seems to me a lot of the stuff that people were that were popular back then would probably not even be looked at. I mean, I'm thinking of, you know, authors William Faulkner, who was still writing in the 1950s and received the Nobel Prize after the Second World War. You sort of wonder whether somebody like that would even break the top 500 literary figures if he were writing novels today. It seems that there really has been a significant change in interest, And as an intellectual historian, I think one could attribute this to all kinds of factors, even including political correctness, but also self-absorption, individual self-absorption. But in any case, you know, picking up books now about addiction or science fiction, I find them less interesting than books in the 1950s. It came out in the 1950s, which interest me by now almost as period pieces. But somehow it sort of points back, at least in my mind, to a more cohesive society, one in which people were sort of less interested in themselves.
I think that's very wise, and I agree with it. I think it's a tragedy that about what you say about William Faulkner not being paid attention to these days. Although I differ with you in one respect, there are several, but not several, many very, very fine literate authors who are writing excellent books. I don't know how large their audience is or whether the accolades that come across the internet are just publisher's puff, but I'm reading the books and they're astonishingly fine. So I don't think there's a dearth of good writing. I think it's just the topics have changed quite a bit. I think there's a new emphasis on gender differences in books. There's a very, very large cadre of authors who write gay romance fiction. Some of it very tender and sweet, other of it is kind of raspy. But the same thing goes for the chick lit group, women who write novels that are influenced by the buff men and women on the covers of the books, with not a lot of substance to them, but a lot of shock value. Those seem to sell very, very well. Does that mean a bad thing? Probably not. I think it's just a diversion. I think people's attention span is so limited now because they have everything instantaneously available on their cell phone or their iPad or the computer or the many things that I don't know how to use. I'm not a high techie. But I bemoan the fact that they pay less attention to the really fine literature than they pay attention to the instant gratification type of book.
It seems to me that intellectual literature is now less popular than probably at any other time in history, at least since people started reading en masse. I think that it is because there's an instant gratification kick in society. People want to feel something important now, and if you read something that's very something that's, whether it's fiction or nonfiction, that's very drawn out, but at the same time very important, a lot of folks just don't have the patience for that sort of thing. Mm-hmm. And I don't think that's going to change. And it's a real shame, as I think we all can agree. But certainly, right, when I, you don't have to go to a bookstore, if you're at like the grocery store or even the dollar store, you see books that are like Grady described, chick lit, stuff like that, that obviously is not out to win any sort of prize, but it sells very well all the same. It probably sells better than books that require much more money to publicize, things that are more intellectual, even if not to the extent that was commonplace in the 1950s. So it's interesting. The state of, I suppose, literary popularity in America is really a reflection of where people are on a psychological level, perhaps an emotional one too. But I don't think there's much question that nowadays, even though more information is available to more people than ever before, thanks to the internet and other things, people, they just aren't as interested in learning in any deep sense. Maybe that is because they're exposed to so much data so quickly that they just expect to see what they want now, and if they don't see it now, they move on to something else instantaneously. So it's a unique situation. Perhaps exposing so many people to so much information has made them less interested in the information overall. They're just sort of washed out by it.
I think that's very, very intuitive. I at the same time, though, I do see a glut of books that are kind of the New Age spiritualism, touching sometimes on drugs, but basically on meditation, yoga, and self-exploration that I think is healthy, except that it's most of them seem very shallow. It's like, this is what I do on my time off. Maybe you should do it too, and your whole life would change. That sounds a little bit negative, but I think there's a ready to publish attitude that perhaps is stopping some of the better books, in that you can self-publish very quickly now, instead of having to submit your manuscript to a publisher and go through all those things that we used to go through. Maybe that's the problem. Again, it's the instantaneous gratification. And I certainly agree with you about the knowledge. You don't have to remember anything. You just Google it. And now when you Google it, you get a full 30 pages of advertisements that play with the word that you're Googling. So I don't know where that's going to end. It seems to be getting worse every year. Do you have any comments about that, Joseph?
No, I agree. I have an ad blocker, so I know what you're saying firsthand, and I remember how annoying it was, which is why I use the ad blocker. It's a very unfortunate situation. I think that Google, it can be used for good. There's no question about that. But most people, they go, for, I guess you could say, the low-hanging fruit. They get what they want in an immediate sense. Mm-hmm. And they really don't think to look any further into whatever it is that they're researching. Like, for instance, say someone has a cough. They might type in cough on Google, and then they see like a WebMD article that says, you know, this cough might be a cold, or it might be a form of cancer that, you know, was just discovered. People can either say, okay, it's a cold, or, oh my God, I might have cancer, and the whole thing, you know, just explodes. But they really don't then look at maybe remedies for the cough, what the likelihood is of having some serious disease associated with the cough. There's actually, I think, a new condition out about hypochondriacs who diagnose themselves, and it almost winds up being some kind of mental illness after a time. So it's unique. The situation, as Grady described it, is very unfortunate, and it does get worse with each passing year. And I think that websites like Google, also social media, Facebook, Twitter, they do profit off of throwing all this information out at people, more information than most people can handle. And all of these websites know very well that most people are not going to take the time to research these very important concepts that are thrown out there, regardless of what they're about. It could be health, it could be nature, it could be anything. And, obviously the companies don't care. As long as they get page views that they could justify for increasing advertising rates, everything is swell. So it's a situation that actually has, when you think about it, an incentive to get worse. And I just I can't see that incentive being removed, very unfortunately.
Yeah, let me just say something about this, because as a longtime professor, I noticed that in the last few years that I was professing, the students read fewer and fewer books, and they relied heavily on Google for information. They used websites, and recently there was a acquaintance of mine and of Joseph's who always gives us his opinion on the website, and wrote things about NATO, which he addressed to me and to another historian, which were absolute nonsense. They had nothing to do with NATO. And he was very dogmatic, and he insisted this was the truth because he had found it on some website, on Google or somewhere else. And I wrote back with obvious irritation that I would expect him to read, at least to read a book on the subject. But you know, if he reads a book, he reads a book about sports, or he reads, you know, very, very light. He has very light books that are just very light reading. But then he gives opinions about some scholarly subject on the basis of something he just was able to pick up while Twittering or on Google. And I find this is more and more characteristic of the younger generation, that they depend for research, scholarship, for knowledge, for facts, everything else, not on books, but on what's available on the website. Right. And when they read things that are extremely frivolous. At least that was and is my impression.
I think that's right on track. I'm always surprised in being a reviewer, what is submitted to me to review, and then when I look it up to see what the background of the writer is, if they have any, it's very superficial. And all at the same time, I'm seeing when people do review, quote, books, they often limit it to a sentence or two that usually begins with awesome, and this is a page turner, I couldn't put it down, and some little snippets like that really don't talk about anything. And I think that's sort of like the way things are being thought out. It's a very quick judgment, trying to say something is worth reading or not, and instead they just say what their opinion is, and that is usually awesome or it's just awful. I really get tired of that when I'm looking around for different people's viewpoints. I don't know how you feel about that, Paul.
Mm-hmm.
How do you feel about it, Paul?
Excuse me, could you repeat the question?
How do you feel about the very abrupt, empty-headed babble that people call a review? When they choose to read something, if they actually have read it, which is usually doubtful, they just make it this book is awesome, I couldn't put it down, got to read this book, and that's it. Nothing about the content or about the quality of the writing. It's just gut level explosion of either love or hate about the particular book.
You know, let me take this off. I think people do read books and are excited, continue to be excited by books that they're reading. I do not want to give the impression that people are not writing good books anymore. Because they're very good scholarly books that I certainly encounter all the time in my profession. And they're good novels that I see. And, you know, even my own children tell me they're excited by books that they're reading. But I have made this observation about millennials, people who are now millennials, who are students recently, that there isn't that much interest in reading books except for amusement. And they're very much dependent on the internet for facts or for information. I would not doubt that, you know, in terms that numerically there is many people now who are, you know, reading decent books and benefiting from them as there was at, you know, just about any time in the past. There's just more readers, more people reading than there was in the past. Most of these are not particularly discriminating readers. And my impression, particularly of the younger generation, is that it's very hard to get them, believe it or not, even with the ones who have college degrees and advanced degrees, it's sometimes hard to get them into the practice of reading books except for amusement.
Agree.
I think that talking about reviews specifically that are like the one-liners Grady was referring to, even though what Paul said is correct, that people tend to read what they're excited by, I think that, you know, you can only be excited to the extent that you describe a book as awesome so many times. There does come a point at which you're simply regurgitating this stuff because it's easy to do so, maybe because you want attention, maybe you want to be in favor with the publishing house or author or whatever. I mean, there are many different reasons. But I think it is also a sign of the times, and that people just aren't thinking through what they do. So they, if they do take the time, which is quite rare when you consider the amount of readers out there, to actually review a book, it does seem apropos that they would just say something, you know, very cheap, very quick, very bombastic, even something mindless. And obviously, if you're looking at book reviews, that the last thing you want, because you want a good assessment of what it is, so you know whether or not it's worth your time and money. But it is an unfortunate situation, to say the least.
Well, Joseph, in addition to that, I think, now speaking now of Amazon, I think one reason that people regurgitate these itty-bitty reviews, quote-quote, is because Amazon likes that. They like to have a whole lot of five-star people saying it's awesome and buy this book because it makes them sell. Whereas those of us who tend to write lengthy reviews, sometimes they don't get published for 5 days to a week to 2 weeks. And you wonder why reviews that are that go into the book and the author and the place of the book in the world today just doesn't seem to appeal to the people that screen the reviews. You will see a lot of reviews that are of the type that we've been discussing, the awesome reviews, plastered the minute that they're written. And yet, reviews that are more deep get stuck kind of toward the end of the track. I don't know if whether you notice that when you're looking through Amazon or even Goodreads or Barnes & Noble or wherever, you, BookBub, Books A Million, all of them seem to be treasuring these little quick buy this book now kind of reviews.
They do. It's valuing quantity over quality. And mm-hmm. I presume they do that because they believe that if they just get a lot of good reviews, as you mentioned, out there, then people will be more likely to buy whatever's on their website. So I would think that they, you know, it, obviously they're not interested in an honest assessment of the work. But what they are interested in is having the book be as attractive as possible to as many people as possible. And the people who run these book websites know that, you know, since the average reader has a short attention span when it comes to what he or she is reading, obviously that person is going to have a short attention span when it comes to the reviews. So that person really isn't going to care if these reviews just say awesome, cool, radical, whatever. And it's a bad situation, one in which there's an incentive for these companies to continue doing counterproductive things. And, you know, then again, you can only blame the company so much because they're responding to the popular sentiment of the time. And it's just an unfortunate sentiment. I think that's the real problem. Paul, any thoughts on that?
No, I keep coming back to what I said before, that there are lots of good books, and I'm not in literature, I'm an historian. There's lots of good books in my field. What always shocks me is how little interest there is in the general public in these works, and how silly most of the treatments of subjects are, for which there is, you know, ample literature that is constantly coming out, which these journalists and others can avail themselves. I did a book on fascism. Now I'm doing a book on anti-fascism. And what I find interesting is that you have, you know, serious people writing on that, thinking on fascism. You have excellent scholars writing on this. But then you get a Yale professor who tells you that the governor of a state is a fascist, Trump is a fascist, that some news work, network is. It has no idea what fascism is. And you see, you know, why don't these people avail themselves of these marvelous books that are available on the subject? This is one of the reasons I wrote this book, which I look at historiography. And I'm interested, even among journalists, there seems to be very little interest on things that they write on. And their knowledge is extremely superficial, particularly on historical subjects. But this is not because there is a dearth of literature, or even the literature that's coming out all the time. It's because they don't read the damn stuff.
That's right.
Talking about Amazon now, Grady, why don't you, I suppose, in a nutshell, explain how it is that you came to be an Amazon top reviewer. I mean, that's obviously something that takes a lot of work to attain. You can't do it overnight or even within the span of a year. How did you get to that level?
Oh my, I'm not really sure. I've been reviewing on Amazon for over 20 years. And when I started it, I would just be reviewing either books that I had loved when I read them, or the recordings of classical music, which is my forte, that I really loved. And I spent my time doing that. And then I noticed people started requesting reviews, authors, and now it's basically publicists that request reviews. And so it's just grown almost without thinking about it. I was looking at my profile page, and over the years I've written in excess of 22,000 reviews, and I've had over 108,000 votes for my reviews. Those are big numbers, but then when you spread it out, knowing that I've been doing this since Amazon started, and I think it's 98, it's been just a slow growth. I've kept with it because I enjoy it. I enjoy reading very much, and I also enjoy scratching my head and putting my thoughts down on paper, or rather on the computer. So it's just grown now so that I get... far more requests for reviews from authors, from friends of authors, and from publishers than I can handle. You have to know when to say, no, that's not a topic that I choose to review, to read and review. And that's not a comfortable situation to be in when an author says, I just have the greatest awesome book that you've got to read. Time is precious, and I wouldn't want to just waste it on trivia. But at the same time, some of the pieces that come out, and I find this in making their debut, there's some really fine talent out there, and if somebody doesn't help them, they will never be discovered. So I sort of pay close attention to first-time debut authors. And thanks to you, Joseph, with the San Francisco Review of Books, you seem to do the same thing. And I think what you're doing is a great boon to contemporary authors. And I applaud what you're doing and the class that you instill in the way that you put these before the public. I think it's
Thank you very much, Grady. I also, it's a great time to thank you for writing such a nice review of my book, which came out earlier in the year. It's definitely a great, it was a wonderful thing. And as a first-time author in that regard, at least that was my first proper book, I thank you for that. It definitely makes a difference. And I have heard from different people on social media that the SFRB does something good by featuring so many first-time authors. You know, we do some big authors, but then we do the first-timers as well. And I think we have a good mix. And to me, that's important because there are a lot of book reviews out there, but you have to set yourself apart from the pack. And I think a good way to do that is by having diverse content. And that just doesn't mean running different things, but sort of giving people something unexpected, like in a book review, they'd expect to see an author from Random House featured, but they might not expect to see someone who self-published something that's just available on Amazon in Kindle format. So when you mix it up, I think it works out well for everyone.
Yeah, may I ask a technical question, since I don't know much about how these reviews are placed on the Amazon website? Most of the reviews of my books have been very nice, but I assume they all come from individual readers. Where would I look for the review done by, you know, the kind of in-house review that we're discussing, one that Grady would be writing, as opposed to one that these random reviewers are placing on Amazon?
Oh, well, I'm not an in-house reviewer. I review for Amazon, but I'm not part of Amazon. My reviews, Joseph publishes my reviews. They're in Goodreads, which is, I think, an excellent site.
And, okay.
A lot of different places. So I'm not an in-house reviewer. The only way you can find, that's a good question, Paul. I think the only way that you can really come across my reviews is if I happen to have reviewed a book that you're looking at.
Okay.
When you cue in the title or the author, my name will come up as one of the reviewers, but you have to search for it. Unless people like Joseph pick it up and put it out there again, it draws attention.
Well, they're certainly worth drawing attention to. And, you know, it's interesting because a lot of top reviewers on Amazon have come and gone. Grady's still there. Someone who Paul and I interviewed recently, David Weinberg, he's another Amazon top reviewer. He still has the top reviewer designation. They haven't deleted his reviews or anything like that. But he now goes to other websites to post his reviews because he's aggravated at Amazon's policies. So there is quite a bit of turnover, even in Amazon's top reviewers, which doesn't say anything good about Amazon itself. When you think about all the work that goes into these reviews, certainly the quality of them is not bad across the board. But people do get frustrated with the Amazon website rather easily. And I suppose that brings up the next question, Grady. What do you think the future of Amazon top reviewing is? Do you think that Amazon will be friendly toward reviewers such as yourself in the future? Do you think they'll become more unfriendly? Or do you think the situation will stagnate? What's your assessment of it?
If I had the answer to that question, I would broadcast it. When you review for Amazon, you don't have any contact with anyone at Amazon. You just simply submit, and it's either picked up and published immediately, or if they don't like your review, if it has something in it that they don't feel is fits their standards, they will say, we cannot accept this review. That happens very rarely for me. Why am I still a top reviewer? I don't know. I've gone from top 10 to top 100. Right now I'm number 56. On Monday I was number 51. Last week I was number 30. So they just pop it all over the place. And I think they do that not by choice, but by the number of the percentage of helpful reviews your reviews achieve. I think it's as cold as that. And if somebody has it in for you and they want to put not helpful, that can drive your status on the review squad down. I'm not really sure. I have a lot of followers. You know, Amazon lists followers and helpful votes and categories. I'm the top children's book reviewer, which seems strange because that's not all I read, but I do enjoy reading children's books because the authors tend to be really nice, fun people. But then there's the Hall of Fame, which you get into if you've been around. I don't know how they manipulate it. It is frustrating to try to communicate with Amazon about, you know, asking them, why do you say this about a review? Why did you turn this one down? Or why have you not published this for 3 weeks? There's no one there. You get the click on the service chat, and that person sends you all over the world, mostly in India, to give you answers that don't really mean anything. So it's very frustrating. I agree with you, Joseph. It's very frustrating to try to figure out how Amazon functions.
I think Amazon has no incentive whatsoever to rectify some of these points that you've raised, because they are essentially a conglomerate. They are conglomerates, I could say essentially an internet monopoly over various forms of e-commerce. I think that since they don't have anyone really to compete with them, at least not in the United States. In China, there are some websites that are among the Chinese people extremely popular, but they have very limited reach outside of China. But throughout the rest of the world, or most of it at least, Amazon is the top dog, and there's no one really trying to fight with them for their position in the doghouse. So they just figure, whatever. It's like that with, you know, reviewers. It's like that, I've heard, with consumers. Amazon's just, you know, it shrugs, because what what reason does it have to take anyone seriously? So that's I think an issue with Amazon beyond literature. It's just sort of their corporate culture. And I think that in the future, probably more reviewers will wind up leaving Amazon for places like Goodreads, for Medium, and a library thing. Perhaps because all of those websites are more, as I understand it, I don't post reviews on them, but I have heard that they are easier to deal with in many ways in comparison to Amazon.
Mm-hmm. That's very true. If you submit a review to Goodreads, you click on save, and the review is automatically on the minute that you review it. And I usually make a copy of that and send it to the author whose book I've reviewed. And they really love getting that. I also send every author that I review copies when they send me an email that my review has been published. They give a little thank you for helping people with your review. And I forward that to the authors. I think that's something that is important, to try to keep authors encouraged in what they're doing. It's also very interesting that not a lot of authors tend to write back and say, thank you for doing that. It's always amazing to me how ready they are to ask for, you know, complimentary reviews, because you don't get paid a cent for it. And yet you do it and then forward them a copy of the review, and you never hear from them again until they have a new book. And then you gave me a good review 3 years ago. Here's my new book. Read it now. That speaks sadly for some of the authors. I'm sure that a lot of them that are very popular and very busy just don't have the time to say thank you for emailing me a copy of my review. I don't know. It's just a little bug that kind of surfaces now and then.
I think anyone would be annoyed by that. And I think it just is, that's more of a cultural commentary than a literary one. But definitely, I think a lot of people now have they don't feel they have any reason to have good manners in a professional or personal situation. That's not saying, you know, everyone's like that, obviously not. But I think more and more people are just apathetic toward others, even if those people do nice things for them. It's very unfortunate.
Yeah, I have a question about the value of reviews. I mean, this might be a strange question for Grady to have to answer, but it's something that has interested me for a very long time. How important are reviews for book sales? If I get, or if somebody gets a nice review on Amazon, will that have a positive impact on the sale of his or her book? How important is it getting a good review on Amazon relative to getting a good review in the New York Times or Washington Post? Is there any way that you can make this judgment?
It's a very, very good question. I think people respond more to Amazon because it's instantaneous. I don't know how many people actually read newspapers anymore. Especially good ones like the Washington Post and New York Times. I treasure what those newspapers write about books in their reviews. I read them frequently. But I don't think people are taking the time to pick up a newspaper and actually read either current events, if they would rather get it on Twitter or Instagram, mm-hmm. and the newspaper. So I don't know whether they're even aware of the fact that the book mm-hmm. was reviewed by the newspapers. I think they want that instant gratification of looking on the internet and saying, oh, that looks like there are a lot of positive 5-star reviews. That's probably pretty good. I don't know, Paul. I don't know whether anybody really knows whether good reviews influence sales. I do know that there are authors who are very prolific and who do respond every time you post a review and send out ARCs, advanced reader's copies, for you to review, so that the first day that it's on Amazon, they will have your review up. Those people tend to keep track of the number of positive reviews and tell you that they've been number such and such on the sales for the day. So I guess if you write a lot of little short books, almost chapbooks, it makes a difference. For the major novels, I don't know. I don't know whether people are reading them enough to have any kind of an opinion on that. I hate to sound so nebulous on this, but I have to face every day.
I think that novels, they'll always have some measure of public interest. Nonfiction books, less so. I think it goes back to that whole anti-intellectualism kick in society that we discussed earlier. But reviews of novels, I've seen them used, not even a sentence of the review. It's just maybe a few words from it. And the publisher will put at the bottom, not even the reviewer's name, but Washington Post or New York Times or something like that. And I think the reviews are just used as hopeful marketing tools. I say hopeful because I don't even think that the publishers or the press agents really know if these reviews are going to drive publicity, but they figure it can't hurt. And what's important at that stage is just the publication, not whether or not the reviewer is any good or the reviewer has a good track record. It's just, you know, something you throw out there for somebody to look at for maybe 2 seconds before they move on to the next part of the advertisement. And, you know, 5 seconds after that, they'll disregard the advertisement entirely. So it's that's what I think the utility of big name reviews are nowadays. It's really about publicity. And I think on Amazon you see the same spirit at work, even though it's not there. Obviously, it's not about what publication the review comes from. It's all on Amazon. But Amazon wants one-liners, things that it can use for whatever book is in question to seem attractive. Even if the book, you know, is objectively terrible, they still want these awesome, cool, whatever reviews up there. And more substantive ones, they're just not interested in them because they have no market utility. Even though for someone who's a discerning book reader, what you want are those longer reviews. So it's yet another discouraging situation where there's an incentive for bad behavior.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that getting Grady to review something, I mean, I don't know about literature, but if you review something which is nonfiction and it's written by an academic, that can be used for professional advancement. I have a colleague who succeeded to a chair that I held, and his book was reviewed in the New York Times, and he was promoted immediately. Of course, it's a small college, but it meant a great deal. So I think in terms of professional advancement, those written reviews do mean something. In terms of sale, I would much rather appear on Oprah Winfrey, you know, if I'm trying to sell books, or on CNN or Fox or one of those cable networks. But if I'm simply looking at professional advantages, getting a nice review of my book in a leading newspaper, you know, something, the national press, or even something on Amazon, would certainly help my career.
Yes, I see so many authors coming forth with their first or second, perhaps, book, and they list on the cover of their book number one best-selling in the Wall Street Journal and New York Times and Washington Post. Have they even been reviewed there? I don't know. But they use that banner to try to get attention. I'm not sure about a lot of the situations that we've been discussing. I wish I had a better knowledge of where we are going. I'm happy doing what I'm doing, and my reviews get used. I see them on the cover, back covers of books a lot. But I think more than Amazon, something like what you're doing, Joseph, is much more sophisticated and is going to increasingly draw attention because you have a class act and it sounds great. The San Francisco Review of Books, you know, doesn't sound like Amazon. It sounds like Washington Post or New York Times. And I think what you're doing is a real boon to good authors.
Thank you very much for the kind words, Grady. I do hope that authors and the book reading public see it in the same way. But to hear that from you, it's very welcome. I thank you again. To think about, I guess now the future, since we've discussed so much of the present, I don't know that Amazon will remain in the very long run as popular a place as it is now for books. I think at some stage something is going to happen, and I think even Jeff Bezos has said that Amazon won't last forever. So when that time comes, I think there might be a more, perhaps people will go back to looking at quality reviews, and I think that they might just do that because there'd be different outlets to consider. And maybe they would just look at what seems interesting to them, because when you look at the awesome reviews, the cool reviews, the one-liners, they function best when there are few sources of information for consumer reviews. And obviously they're one on top of the other, so it's abundance. And it's like a hive mind mentality. You get, it's almost like a form of peer pressure. People look at these reviews and they think, oh, this book is cool, so I'll get it. And that works out well when there's just one big website like Amazon where these reviews appear. But then if you have different book review websites, perhaps people will then look at these reviews as articles, not just like something to consider for 10 seconds. And maybe then they will consider each review in the fashion that these reviews deserve to be considered, and then they will base their book buying habits on the basis of something more substantive. So it's only my hope. This is, you know, pretty much an off-the-wall theory, but it might happen. And it definitely, you know, the hope that might happen is better than thinking that the present situation will continue in perpetuity.
I'm completely with you on that. I have enough faith in individuals' intellectual abilities that sooner or later they're going to get tired of this instantaneous gratification thing, and they're going to want to dig deeper. Maybe it will be with age, when they're tired of fluff, and they really want some substance. So they're looking for, hopefully they'll be looking for books that offer that, and God only knows that's where most of us get our encouragement, from really fine literature and fine music, the arts. It's,
definitely.
In the end, it will happen, I hope.
I think we all do. At the SFRB, I often, you know, when we do old short stories, I don't even post. I tried that at the beginning, like on Twitter. I tried posting the name of the author and the name of the story. People just didn't, you know, the Twitter post just wasn't very popular. So what I then did was I did a snippet of something from, and I still do this, a snippet of something from the story, and I just post that with the link, and it's much better. So that's sort of a way of turning people's desire for instant gratification into an incentive to read something that's, you know, much longer. And I think that, you know, it's a very, you know, minor thing in the grand scheme of things, but it does symbolize how people find instant gratification attractive at the onset. But then they might say, well, you know, that was good for the time, but now I want something else. And that I think is symbolized by looking at the short snippet of the story, then clicking through and then reading the longer story. So it's you definitely have to meet people on their level, but I don't think that anybody would be very happy if they clicked from, you know, a link that had a snippet before it, and then they just read another snippet. People, even today, I think they do want something deeper than what they typically find online. But the thing of it is, a lot of them just don't have the time, effort, or energy, or even interest to really dig deep enough to find what they're looking for. But if you make it accessible for them to at least consider doing that, then they might wind up doing it. So that's my, you know, very anecdotal analysis of this. Are we going to say something, Paul?
No, let me just take this off. Yeah, I agree that the person who's interested in a topic will not be satisfied with the snippet, and will probably look for something more deal. But the advantage of the snippet is that for those who are just occasional readers, and who are not really interested in looking at something that's very deep, the snippet might work. And you know, it might not lead beyond itself, depending on the reader, you know, that it is aiming to attract. But I do agree that anybody whom we might consider to be a serious reader would not be content with the snippet and would probably look for something more detailed before investing time and money in a book.
Any thoughts on that, Grady?
I agree with Paul. I think that people who are really interested in exploring a subject that they've heard there's a book out that's really worth your attention, I think they will perhaps go on Amazon, because you can get it from Amazon very quickly overnight if you're a Prime member, and for less money. But I think my cell phone is banging at me. Lost my train of thought because of that. Sorry.
No, it happens. Actually, Paul, you might want to restate what you said at the end very quickly, if you don't mind.
Repeat what I said at the end.
Yes, just at the end.
No, I said is that a person who... who is a serious reader would probably want to look at a full review before investing money, and perhaps even more important, his time and energy in reading something.
Yes, I agree with that, Paul. And what I was going to say is, I think if a person is a serious reader and they really are interested in finding out, is this book something that I would like to read? Who is this author? What have they written? What is the theme of the book? Does it work well? Is it written well? I think they will look on Amazon and they'll skim over the little one-liners until they reach an actual honest review, and they'll pay attention to that something that covers all of the aspects that they want to know. It is available to people. They can go past all the awesomes and get to a meaty review. And there are some very fine reviewers that contribute to Amazon. So I think that it is a possibility for good readers to find good reviews, but they just have to look a little bit further than the surface.
As we begin to wrap up the discussion, what sort of books do you think will be popular, say, over the next 5 to 10 years, Grady? Do you think it's going to be the sort of fiction books that you mentioned at the beginning of the conversation, or do you think that do you see maybe the potential for another genre to pop up and sort of take the world by storm? Like, for instance, I don't think that back in the last decade anybody really saw the Twilight book series, which is aimed at teenagers, I believe, coming, but it wound up having a huge impact for a few years, and that spurned a whole bunch of vampire literature that has now pretty much fallen by the wayside, but you know, those books still made a tremendous deal of money. So is there anything that you see happening that perhaps a lot of people don't notice right now, but it might come about all the same?
Unfortunately, I don't see that. If you look at what is adapted from books to either cinema or television, it seems to be going rapidly downhill. I think people want to think of the world as being a better place, but at the same time, it's sort of jolly to wallow in the mess that we find ourselves. And I don't know whether maybe a change in the way Washington, D.C. is handled will change that. Hopefully it will. I think people need an infusion of enthusiasm for a better life and for good that just isn't readily available right now, except through the cannabis group and the instantaneous sex books and sex videos. I think it will go back to quality, because there's only so much trash that you can tolerate in a lifetime, and then it's too old to worry about, and you want something of substance. I see a lot of memoirs coming out by people who are very famous and people who are totally unknown, but they want to give a memoir of what their life has been and their journey to where they are now. I'll be sending you a couple of reviews like that soon, Joseph.
Great.
They're very touching and impressive, and I think maybe that will be a way people will start expressing themselves by reflecting on their life, and maybe that will make it change.
No, I look forward to seeing the reviews. I was going to say that a lot of memoirs are good, as I think we all can agree. Sometimes, though, they're sort of, they're not, and it could be for different reasons. I mean, maybe it was ghostwritten to the extent that it's really not a memoir. It's someone writing a biography of you and then just using your name because you're more famous than they are. Then there are also other memoirs that are written by people who really don't reveal a lot of their lives, or they make stuff up. And that's, you know, problematic for obvious reasons. And then there are just people maybe who they're too young to write a memoir, and they write it and it just seems a little self-indulgent. And I think any memoir is, but you could be self-indulgent and still communicate an important message that helps other people in their own lives. But some, you know, particularly celebrity memoirs I'm thinking about here, I don't think do that. It's really just a glorified Instagram post, if you will. So, yeah, no, but memoirs can be great, and I look forward to reading what you'll send over. And it's good that people like reading memoirs, generally speaking, though, because I think it does speak to a desire that people have to learn from the mistakes of others and also perhaps share in the joy that other people experience in their own lives. So memoirs
here. You're here.
Yeah, so memoirs across the board are a good thing, I think, but you have to be careful because you can get some bombs thrown out as well. It's touch and go, but generally positive. Paul, do you have any opinion on memoirs?
Well, I like reading memoirs as opposed to another genre to which I've been exposed as an historian, which is the biographies of American political figures, most of which are deadly dull, you know, and written by people who have absolutely no literary style, and are simply trying to jam as many facts as they can onto every single page. Those books are a torment to read. But, you know, some of the memoirs I've seen, some are very gracefully written. I'm always very happy to read things by George F. Kennan, for instance, who is a beautiful stylist. You know, I being an historian and a political historian, this is the kind of stuff that I would mention. But there are many people who write very, very gracefully, even political figures like Dean Acheson, whose work are just a pleasure to read. And there are many historical figures whom I enjoy reading about. I cannot say that actors or actresses interest me very much. You know, I would find it painful to sit down and read through the memoirs of Bette Davis, for instance. I'm sure my wife might be more interested than I am. But you know, I'm always eager to read things by political figures who wrote well, you know, at some kind of literary style.
Right. Agree.
For the final question, and this will go to Grady and then back to Paul. It's about the future of book reviewing, which, you know, you could discuss the future of books, and that's obviously important. But book reviews, I mean, if you have a book industry without reviews, I think it's going to be a very dull experience for all parties concerned. So do you think, Grady, that book reviews will be done in a way that most people would consider to be journalism? I think that's the best way of putting it. Mm-hmm. In which you have an article that has, you know, a body, and then it has a clear beginning, middle, and end. Or do you think that the awesome, cool, radical, whatever reviews will continue to proliferate in one place or another? I already shared my perspective that over time, I have hope that the more quality reviews might rebound because there'd be an abundance of sources for them in the event that someplace like Amazon were broken up. But even if Amazon isn't broken up, Grady, do you think that there still might wind up being some sort of backlash to the present low quality of reviews, and that people might just look for higher quality reviews for any reason?
I think high quality reviews will always be treasured. I have enough experience working with so many authors that I can see really fine authors stay in touch, and they'll run an idea past me, usually in an email, or sometimes actually, believe it or not, a written letter. I think there is a real need for that. And we were talking about spurious, awesome reviews. You can notice if the people who do those reviews kind of come in spurts, and their awesome notes will be all over the place. And then in 6 weeks, 2 months, 3 months, they're gone. You don't see their name anymore, if they even offer a name. Most of the time they use an acronym or just a one name that doesn't have anything to do with their real name. I think the real reviewers use their real names and use their photograph so that you can connect. And I think that's the big thing. You can't connect with people who are doing the drivel because they don't choose to connect. And the people who really write elect to connect. And I think that will be the reviews of tomorrow. I think that the better reviews will last, and the superficial reviews will fizzle out. Paul?
No, I just want to say I think great reviews hang around or survive as literary exercises, and I know I remember as a young man reading. I wasn't so much interested in the book as the review, because some reviewers really had a way with words, and this was even true, you know, at one time, even reading the New York Times, where I think most of the writing is very pedestrian now. But back in the 50s and 60s, some of the reviews were absolutely brilliantly written. Some of the old reviews in the New Yorker, I remember seeing by White and others, were beautifully done. And I think if, you know, even if the average reader doesn't look at these reviews, if they are well done, if they're well crafted, they may well survive as, one might say, almost sort of as literary artifacts.
I think that's true. I really hope it's true. But I feel strongly that quality will out. I think it always resurfaces, and the dribble kind of goes down the drain, hopefully. I think people are honest enough in wanting to learn about an author or about a subject or a book that they will tend to go to the people who have obviously put in a lot of time and thought into the review. I hope that's true, because I'd like to continue reviewing.
I would like you to continue reviewing as well, obviously, and I'm sure most of the people who read the SFRB would. It would be such a dull place, really, if there were no book reviews, or if the only reviews were the low quality ones that we've mentioned. You need the high quality ones, even if they're not as popular as they should be. They're sort of like a torch in the darkness, and if there's no torch in the darkness, people won't know that such a thing as light exists.
Right. Well said.
Thank you. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. See you next time.